Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
And we're back live on Chip Chat from the IDF show floor. It's the first day of the Intel Developer Forum, and I'm excited to be with VP of the Data Center Group, Shannon Pullen. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Allison.
So IDF, always a good time to learn about the future of technology. What did the Data Center Group announce today? You guys had a big press briefing.
Yeah, we did. We had a bunch of products that we were getting out the door, following up on some announcements we made over the last couple weeks. So we announced, if you remember, last week, we announced the Avoton family of products, so the C2000 family. This week, we followed that up with a great announcement around the Xeon E5 V2 product, codenamed Ivy Bridge, internally to go into some more of the higher-end servers.
So it sounds like two launches in 2 weeks, that's a lot, first of all. Your team must have been very busy. But it seems like you guys have really shifted focus around delivering solutions for the entire data center. You know, a couple years ago, we heard a lot about servers, but now we're hearing a lot about storage, a lot about the network. Can you tell me why the focus has shifted to be so all-encompassing?
Yeah, a couple things. I would say, first off, the penetration we've had in the classic compute part of the market has been very good. Intel economics generally are delivering good experience for customers in that space. As we start to look at data centers that are saying, I need to do more, I need to be more automated, I need to be more agile, I need to orchestrate my workloads and do more cloud-like deployments, they're starting to say, but I've got a lot of these fixed function devices over here around network or storage. I've got things that are fairly static, fairly siloed. How can I take Intel economics and apply it to that space? So what we've looked at is, okay, we've got multiple families of products we could bring to market. We know over the years we've done optimizations for our CPUs in the compute side of the world, and we've done a very good job. But now we're starting to take in some of that feedback and say, okay, what kind of optimizations can I put into networking and storage so that those workloads run best on Xeon? And that's why you're starting to see this succession of announcements come out. It's really a fruit of all that labor that we've done over the last couple of years.
We will be taking questions from the audience. So if you've got something for Shannon, get it ready. We'll be going to that in a few minutes. The thing that makes me think about is that you need to do a lot of customization in terms of the solutions that you're delivering, because you've just opened up a lot of different use cases in terms of the platforms that you're targeting for the solutions.
Yeah, if you think about, like, say, a network environment, right? You got line cards, switches, routers, you've got all kinds of load balancers, different capabilities that generally were done by fixed function devices, might be proprietary CPUs or not. CPUs that weren't using like a typical OS environment that we would see in the Intel architecture space. So when you start to say, okay, we're going to bring Intel into those spaces, you start to also say, what are they doing around encryption and decryption and some of the things that you're doing to accelerate the workloads that run in those environments? Whatever they're doing, we then have to build that capability into our CPUs so that when you do it on an Intel product, you get a leadership experience. So we've been doing a lot of that development pipeline and putting those capabilities into the CPUs and into the platforms. So they now are great for open network deployments or open storage deployments, those sorts of things.
And Intel announced a new program specifically for network today. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, we did. We've had this infrastructure builders-like program that had cloud builders folks doing stuff for a while, right? And we had really great progress, 50-plus folks publishing over 100 different solutions in that space. So that was generally around the server environment. What we've done is we've opened it up recently and said, okay, how do we get some of the network folks in there and do network builders in that space? And really a great broad ecosystem. We launched that today as well. So that's pretty nice to see a bunch of people come together and say, I've got challenges with software-defined networks, or I want to virtualize the network hardware, so I want to do network function virtualization. Those folks now have a place that they can say, okay, I can put my solution up there, and I can see what other people have for use cases and solution deployment up there, and I can adopt those and take a look at them.
So those types of products, are they aimed at traditional data centers or more in the telco environment or both?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, we're all taking a bunch more mobile devices these days, and we're using them in our lives, and we're saying, I want my video, and I want it quick. And there are benefits to telco providers to have that data reside out near the edge, right? Some of the benefit is both you get faster response time when you say, I want to go to YouTube and I want to pull a video, but you also aren't pulling all the way from their central data center and utilizing all their bandwidth to get it pushed all the way out to the edge if you're one of many users of a video clip or something like that. So there are advantages both to them in terms of how they deploy as well as to us, and that's out at the edge of the network. But what you're also seeing is just like virtualization came into the compute space inside the data center, you've also got people that say, I want to use general purpose computing, I want to use Xeon platforms to run my network stack or my network switching and routing stack in a virtual machine on a standard server. So that's more in the data center space.
I think we've got a question from the audience.
All right.
Hi, congratulations, Shannon, for launching Xeon E5 V2 today.
Thanks.
So there are lots of talks about software-defined data center and the software-defined infrastructure.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about why Intel matters in this type of software-defined environment?
Sure. So from a software-defined perspective, right, when we look at it, people are really going there to say, I want to have more rapid delivery of the service that I want to deploy. Diane talked in our announcement today about how it takes Intel IT a couple weeks, you know, to hook up all the networking and configure all the network infrastructure to deploy a new workload. People don't want to wait a couple weeks. They want to deploy that in a couple hours. Well, to get there, you have to do some things like virtualizing the network infrastructure. You have to do some things like saying, I'm going to separate the control plane and the data plane of a network switch and so that you're able to easily route traffic and set the control pattern of that traffic. That enables them to have a faster response time for that service delivery. So we're doing it all with the thought of, if you go through a cloud deployment, whether that's a public cloud deployment, a private cloud deployment, a hybrid cloud deployment, you can deliver a service faster. So from Intel's perspective, anybody that can do a service faster with data center infrastructure is probably going to use more data center infrastructure, right? So for us, it's a little bit self-serving that we're, of course, going to be able to sell more equipment in that space. But the benefit is that people are going to see Intel economics in their deployments. And that's what we want, is really to drive the rapid adoption of that technology and remove any barrier that folks have, whether it's compute like happened, you know, 7-8 years ago in virtualized compute, whether it's what's happening now with network function virtualization and software-defined networking, or whether it's what's also happening now around storage, right? People are figuring out, how do I do software-defined storage? So we're seeing all those different aspects come into play.
You know, I'm going to take it back to processors for a second, because we came out of the two launches. I was at the Atom C2000 launch. A lot of talk about microservers, cold storage, networking devices that on the low end of that product range. E5, 21 processors in that family, reaching across a vast variety of workloads. How do you see those two processors in terms of addressing specific needs in the data center? And, you know, how would you characterize to the audience the role of Atom versus Xeon in terms of Intel's strategy for this re-architecture?
Yeah, I think the great news from an Intel perspective is Intel architecture runs software that is compatible across all those different spaces. So it's not just Atom, it's Core, it's Xeon E3, all the way up through E5, Xeon E5 and Xeon E7, right? So everything we have is compatible in that space. The workloads that we're seeing down in the, you know, sort of the lower end of compute side, right, are those workloads that are looking at Atom, or they're looking at Core, or they're looking at the Xeon E3 product. And they generally are lower compute and higher I/O, some of those types of boxes, lower power level, lower price point. Good news is we have an offering for those. If you want to be in the real dense space, you can get incredibly dense with some of these system on a chip things that we're developing in that space. Likewise, if you want to virtualize, and many, many people are virtualizing, the vast majority of the products that we have are virtualized on a Xeon E5 or a Xeon E7. So the good news is software compatibility in all those spaces, so I think that's good for us. But also at the same time, any area where somebody might look at cold storage, right? One of the things that Facebook talks about is you post a picture and, you know, in the first day or two or whatever, a lot of people access that picture.
And then nobody looks at it.
Yeah, a year later, nobody looks at it, but Facebook still has to hang on to it, right? And they still need to bring it up when somebody clicks on it. Now, they might be able to bring it up a little bit slower when somebody clicks on it than they do the first day you post it or the first minute you post it, right? So there is a difference in how they're going to store that. They're not going to get rid of it, but there's a difference in how they store that. We have product offerings, whether you want to do it in a cold storage environment or a slow access storage environment like that Facebook example, or whether you want to do the absolute leading performance thing, both the Xeon and the Atom products might be there for you, right? So it's really customers figuring out how they want to use these products best.
We have another question from the audience.
Yeah, hi. It sounds like from what I'm seeing at the show that SDI brings a large amount of flexibility and efficiency. But it also looks like it's a larger investment. So how do small and medium businesses get to take advantage of this?
Yeah, great question. I think a couple things, right? If you think about virtualization, you think back to how people deployed virtualization. If you remember, it was, okay, I've got this IT infrastructure that I run, and you know, I don't really want to disrupt that right away. So I'm going to set up a virtual pool over here, and I'll do a bunch of test and development on my virtual pool. And eventually I will add more and more workloads to it. And initially, if you remember, you know, 7-8 years ago, I'm not going to put more than 3 or 4 VMs on that. I can't imagine it's going to handle more than 3 or 4 VMs. And now we're into, you know, tens of VMs, hundreds of VMs, depending on the system. I think you're going to see the same type of evolution around SDI. I think people are going to deploy that technology in parallel. They're going to start to build it up over time and figure out they can do more and more with that infrastructure, and then they're going to shrink their investments in the classic infrastructure that they had over time. Very similar to the way virtualization was deployed. And then I think the added level of complexity that they're going to see out of SDI around the network and around the storage, I think they're going to find ways to knock down some of the, let's call them political silos that exist today. I've got an IT person that runs storage, an IT person that runs networking, an IT person that runs my computer server infrastructure. What do I do, right? So that's going to be something that also needs to be solved. And I think that's going to be a process that's solved over time. I think you also mentioned a couple of things around small and medium businesses. I think that's going to go through a bit of an evolution. If you think about, there's a lot of small companies, startup companies, they're born on the cloud today. Right, you look at, you know, Amazon will talk about Pinterest and Netflix and, you know, Instagram and a bunch of other, you know, companies that start out, you know, in the cloud space, and then in a public infrastructure space like that, eventually there will be some level of crossover, right, where you say, boy, I'm spending a lot on my infrastructure. Am I growing enough to have my own data center? Yes or no, right? And then what does that infrastructure look like as I move to that over time? So I think it's going to be a period of feeling out, figuring out where these workloads land and which companies are more likely to move from what they have to some other environment, call it public or private cloud.
Do we have another question?
Shannon, this morning BK announced a new architecture called Quark for the Internet of Things. But a question for you is, do you see any role for Quark in the data center?
Yeah, we're not seeing it right now, role for Quark. The perspective that we have is we've got a bunch of products that are very aggressively priced, aggressive power level, that we think run the types of systems that you would see typically in a data center today. And we talked about line cards and routers and switches and cold storage and many of the things that are lower on the compute scale. We haven't seen a lot in the data center, and you guys can walk around any data center you know. We haven't seen a lot in the data center that says, I want less compute than that. I want less power than that. You know, so we're not seeing a space for it right now. I think the interesting things that BK talked about, the synthesizable core, the ability of people to customize the uncore, that kind of stuff applies to wearables, applies to some of the things that we're doing over in the client side, but doesn't really apply in the data center.
You don't see wearables in the data center anytime soon, Shannon?
Not yet. You know, I would never say never, but boy, putting one of those servers on your back doesn't seem like a good idea right now.
Exactly. Do we have time for a couple more questions?
Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
So what do you see as kind of the major differences between IA and everything that we can do with all the different architectures in the data center and anything else that would be competing for that space?
Yeah, I think from an Intel architecture perspective, I think the one tremendous advantage we have is we're at an Intel developer forum. You talk to all these developers, they know how to develop software on Intel architecture. They know what the ecosystem looks like. They have instruction set compatibility. And they also know as you go from one generation to the next, your software is going to work. There's no instruction set, you know, incompatibilities that you have to deal with. So I think from that perspective, if you talk to a data center administrator, somebody looking to deploy a workload, they're saying, what am I doing that's compatible not only for today, but for where I want to go in the future? And they're looking at fixed function devices like network and storage, and they're saying, this doesn't fit with where I want to go. It's architecturally not compatible if I have a Freescale or a MIPS or a PowerPC or an ARM or an ASIC or an FPGA. Those things are not as compatible with where I want to go in terms of workload deployment on any type of infrastructure in the future. I think that's a tremendous advantage that we have. And then with the launch of the C2000 and now the Ivy Bridge E5, well, now we've got every level of the spectrum covered from a performance and price and power perspective. So I think it's data center administrators and the feedback that I've seen for the workloads that they're trying to deploy, we've got the right consistency of architecture, and I think that's going to be a big advantage for us.
Final question for you, unless we've got one from the audience. You know, I know that you're a long-term veteran of the data center arena. You took a short hiatus doing some field work for Intel. You're back in the data center group. As you've come back and re-immersed yourself in what this organization is doing and working with the industry to deliver, and we're at the Intel Developer Forum, what area right now of technology innovation gets you the most excited in terms of, oh my gosh, we're on the cusp of something really big here in terms of delivering customer value? And where would you point our ecosystem to pay a little bit more attention if they aren't right now?
Yeah, I spent 12 years in the data center group, worked with all the different OEMs that we had and software partners and end users. It was great. Like you said, spent a couple years away and then just came back about a month or two ago. Amazing how much things have changed in a couple years. The deployment of services or the rapid deployment of services or desire to be more nimble and flexible, just light years ahead of where it was 2.5-3 years ago. You know, I would also say the way that IT is now an integral part of the business, you know, whereas before it was a cost center. How much are you spending on IT and how can we reduce that number? Now it's how can I use IT to help me deliver a service quicker, to get a product to market faster, to decrease the time that I have to spend before I can get money out of the idea that I have and the money that I want to get, right? So everything that I've been challenging my team to go do is look at how in this new services-oriented world, rapid service delivery, call it cloud, call it software-defined infrastructure, whatever you like, how do I help people go down that path and make money on Intel architecture? Right, because it's not just enough that we're in there with the CPUs and that's all great. We've got to make sure the ecosystem and all of our partners can make money in that environment. You know, there are going to be people that change and I think adopt and are able to follow that path, and there are going to be other people that are disrupted. The only thing constant in our industry is change, right? So there are going to be people disrupted as we go down that path. But I'm challenging my team to get smarter on software-defined infrastructure, smarter on service delivery, and figuring out how we can add value to our partners, because I believe that's going to benefit us long-term.
Shannon, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I would love to talk to you all afternoon, but I think your admin may kill me if I don't let you off the stage soon. So thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you back on Chip Chat soon. And for those of you in the audience, please stay tuned. We will be back on air at 3 p.m., with Intel futurist Brian Johnson.
Good deal. Thanks.